Blog Talk Radio.
I think it's a beautiful song. And so thanks, Hatter, for writing that. He's in the studio with me right now. And I want to say that this is Lady A speaking, and I am a part of a group called All Poetry, or excuse me, Team with Voices. And we are a part of allpoetry.com, the largest poetry group in the world. And we're here tonight to have some fun and talk about how did we get to be who we are. And as I said, I have Mr. Jay Hatter in the studio with me right now, and we're going to say hi. Before we do that, I want to say thank you very much to Deborah Lee, who is our illustrious producer and creator of these blog talk radio programs for poetry. And she's the inspiration for all of us. And I thank you, Deb, for being who you are and helping us to be who we are. And so without further ado, I'm going to say hello to Jay Hatter. How are you, Hatter?
Just fine, Lady. How are you?
Good, good. So we're going to do some poetry tonight. So maybe before we get into it, you can tell us, give me a little secret something or other that I don't already know about you. I know there's lots of stuff that I think I know about you, but give me one something that I don't know about you. Are you able to reveal something like that?
Something that you don't know about me.
Yeah.
I don't know what you know. how about I have saved 11 lives, delivered
yeah.
7 babies.
Wow.
Future life, past life.
Firefighter.
I was in the fire department, did emergency services in California.
That must have been amazing to be able to. Can you tell us about those particular events?
Well, I took a test I think there was over 360 people took a test. They were only hiring the first 15. And I got my letter a week and a half, 2 weeks after testing, which was a whole weekend. It was 3 days of testing. And I was told I was number 16. And I figured, oh, great. That's just, you know, par for the course. Missed it by one. But I didn't realize the first person to wash out, I was going to get the call, which happened. And to be offered something like that, to go to school, to learn the biggest, baddest computer system in the state and pay me. Yeah.
Wow.
So I embraced everything they would teach me for the time I was there. And it gets pretty involved. I would be considered ALS certified, advanced life support.
Right.
But I haven't upgraded my certificate or anything for years. So
can you tell us about one of those events that you saved a life?
Well, I was basically a 911 dispatcher for the fire department.
Okay.
So, one of the babies was cool. I answered the phone one night and I got this guy and he's panicking and he says, my wife's having a baby right now. He goes, this is my second kid. I went through the Lamaze, but I can't think of anything they taught me. So this guy's sort of panicking. So, and she's in the front foyer of the house and she delivered it. It was no problems or anything, but the next day was my day, it was my weekend. And when I came back, I had a note saying that they wanted to meet me. So they had driven up to the Tom Center on a scheduled date. And this guy worked for the Treasury Department. Very nice gentleman. And I got to see the baby and everything. So,
wow.
That was cool. Sometimes that gets televised that they are our officer, our communication officer for the comm center, usually would leak that out to the press and they would show up to be a spot on the news, sort of a good feeling type of news story.
So
but,
and what happened? Like you just walked them through the birth
yeah, basically, there's really not a lot you can do with the delivery, unless there's a problem, and there wasn't. He was just freaking out. She did real well. She was calming him down, and he was very grateful. He was very grateful when I met him, because I went through all those classes and it was the second time through, and I couldn't remember a damn thing. Yeah, they just pretty much teach you in the Lamaze, you know, the why you're in the hospital, the breathing, you know, the coaching, and what to pack and have everything ready for when it happened. They didn't really hit on delivering your own baby in a foyer or home. So So, but that was
that's
a neat,
really
neat
scary
one.
Though for people who you know have never been on that journey before and to be and to handle it that way. There's you know kudos to him too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, he goes, the baby's coming now. You know, apparently he wasn't prepared for that possibly happening. Yeah, it was everything worked out. There was no problems with that. But yeah, if you want to know some of the greatest stories of people, 911 stories, that information gets sent around to communication centers from county to county. And it can go across the states within before the news even has it. So some
really?
Of the weird things you hear, and any time you think you've heard it all, no, you haven't. Something else.
It's exciting though, isn't it? When you get involved in something like that, it's pretty darn exciting, I think. And
yeah, I got a special award from the trauma center downtown in the capital has a head nurse that reviews all our sequence cards. The sequence cards are anytime you do a choking or a childbirth or CPR or anything like that, it gets reviewed. The tape, everything you do on the phone is reviewed on the radio or the phone. It's all taped.
Wow.
And I got a special. What had happened was, I got a call from a doctor saying, "Hey, look, man," he says, "I've got a patient online here that he said he's overdosed. I mean, I was talking to him for an hour. Finally, I'm not hearing anything because I wasn't sure if he had taken anything or not." He says, "I've got it on the phone and I can hear him breathing, but he won't respond."
Wow.
I said, "Okay," and he goes, "This is the number I have for you."
Wow.
And he goes, I tried calling it, and I can't get through. Maybe you could do something with it. I sent my wife up to my office to get past records that are in boxes to see if I could find anything updated for him. And so I said, well, stay on the line as long as you can, and I'll call you as soon as I can, you know, find out anything. And it was in the middle of the night. I was working graveyard. So there was time for me to just dedicate myself to this. And long story short, after about 45 minutes, I had reference numbers, addresses, and then I get a call from the doctor's wife saying, okay, I've got the records here. This is, okay, before I get to there, we traced the number that I had, and it went to a service. An answering service, because it was after hours or on the weekend. I can't remember I think it was on a weekend. So the phone trace stopped at the answering service building. So I sent, I didn't know that at the time I had an address. I sent them and it was not a house. So that was strike one. Then I get a call from the doctor's wife saying, I've got some old records here, and gives me a number. Now, back in the day, you could tell what part of town it was by the prefix of the number.
Yeah.
It was a 363. Now, I knew exactly where that was as far as what township or what area, suburb, basically, where it was. And we did I had to call San Francisco for the U.S. Marshal to get permission to get these traces. Because you have to have,
wow.
I have to give him my badge. I have to give him my badge number and my name, and he calls back, gives me the information. Now I have an address, and I send the sheriff and the fire department there, and it's a big, sort of a ritzy house. Nobody's answering the door. No cars in the driveway. Nobody's there. There's no lights on, and they say, "What do you want me to do?" And and everybody's looking at me like, so we don't know if he's in there. We believe this is his parents' house, but we're not sure if they're still living there. And nobody's in, so I go, kick in the front door, which they did. And it was the longest 6 minutes of my life. Wow. We got no radio traffic back from, I don't know, the sheriff's there, so there it's not illegal break-in. This is an emergency welfare check at this point. And
exactly.
I'm thinking, I just sent these guys in and to bust open this front door. And they come back about 6-7 minutes later and say, we got a patient. He's alive, code 3 to the nearest hospital. And it worked out. He was at his parents' house, and he had OD'd. He was unconscious. He was in dire straits at that time, but he did end up making it. So there was no category for that. The life saves. There's no category for, because you get these, you get a certificate and an award and a mention. You know, this thing had chiefs. I had three different chiefs. I had the OES department head. I had the ER head nurse, all with certificates signed. So it was sort of cool.
Yeah, it was
just because I had time to do it. Now a regular shift at a communication, basically, you wouldn't have time to dedicate to that. Which would have been tragic if I couldn't. But yeah, I sent a fire company and sheriffs in, kicking some door in.
Amazing.
Oh man, because it's gonna land in my lap. That's what I got. This is gonna land in my lap, man. I am responsible for this. Oh man.
Wow.
But, you know, and the credit goes to the doctor, and the doctor's wife, basically. What they did, with the information I got. And the credit goes to them more than anybody.
Yeah. Now, listen, we have a special person that's on the that's called into the show tonight. She's from Colorado, and she got red hair.
Oh.
And she has dogs. She has dogs. And her name is Sweet Pea. Welcome.
Hello, my love. Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Seeing you and Hatter.
She dance with me. Hi. Hi, sweet pea.
Hi, honey. How are you?
So I'm happy that you called in. We were just chatting about Hatter's skills. As an EM, what would you call it? Would it be an EMT? It's more than dispatch. I mean, you have to know what you're doing. So,
well, if you want to be fancy, you'd say I'm an ALS, Communications Office of Emergency Services. If you want to just say it, I was a 911 dispatcher.
Okay.
So,
well, it's more important.
They just wear uniforms. Yeah, uniforms.
But you save lives. I mean, you do. You just, you know, you do. And that's what's really unique about it. You know, you have this ability to make a difference in somebody's life. And, you know, the hat man.
Yeah, it was a great job. It really was. I advanced as fast as anybody there. I was running shifts at the time. So it wasn't the 10-year thing. It was how much do you want to learn? And I volunteered for everything. You want to teach me that and pay me? Yeah, okay. I'll do that.
Yeah.
Where everybody
yeah.
else sort of shying on to things, yeah.
Well, good for you.
The question was, CP, tell us something we don't know about you. That's how
yeah.
it started.
You can tell us
yeah.
a little something that you don't know, that we don't know about you.
What you don't know about me?
Yeah,
I don't know
what you know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I've shared so much about me. It's hard to say what you don't know about me.
You got that urge to graze yet?
No, I don't graze yet.
too soon?
No, too soon, no. Not really. I'm good with it.
Okay.
Let's see. As you know, I'm pretty much the only female around. Let's I know. I've done a lot of deep sea fishing.
You've done a lot of what?
Deep sea fishing.
Oh.
I didn't hear what she said. What did you say?
I've caught a big mahi-mahi. I don't know what that is.
Deep sea fishing. Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what I thought
cool.
you said, yeah.
That's a little hard in Colorado, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it is in Honolulu for, like, 2 years.
What's the biggest one? Wait.
I caught a blue swordfish that was about, I don't know, 600 pounds or something. I don't know. I can't remember.
Wow. Did you get it up to the boat?
No, I had help. I definitely had help.
Yeah, what they do now is you get up, and if you can touch it, then they release it, and you get a wax copy of the same size of fish, I guess.
Oh, no, we sold it in the boat, and I had myself and two people, and they sold it at the pier. This was back in the 80s.
Well, up to a certain size, yeah, the bigger ones, the gigantic ones, they catch and release. I don't know what that size is.
I saw a program last night that they were, not a program, but a video, and they were catch and release catfish, and you should have seen the size of some of those. Unbelievable.
Oh, and I was calling into it. I love elephants. I've always loved elephants. When I was a little girl, I was in the newspaper because I just had a bad mother, but I had brothers. She sat me in front of the elephant cage at the Cleveland Zoo, and I got out of my stroller, and I crawled under the fence, and I was sitting inside the elephant cage, or the elephant, like the little dirt place they used to keep them in.
Wow.
And the elephant was trying to, like, wrap, trying to get me with their trunk, but they were still too far away before somebody picked me up and wrapped. But I was like,
I wonder if he remembers you.
Probably.
Well, no, I don't think he's alive anymore.
Elephants don't never forget.
Yeah.
I love elephants.
So, yeah. I do, too. I'm a big, big elephant.
Did you want to start the show off? And read a poem, I read something to start it off? What is our most desirable situation?
We're
just going to kind of keep laid back a little bit tonight, eh?
Yeah.
So tonight we're going to talk about how we have, the story of us. And how we have become the people that we are today. And I thought that would be an interesting way to get to know some people. However, before we start that, Deb asked me to read a poem, and I'm not sure if it has a SoundCloud or not, I don't think, that got left behind the other night. So that's what I'm going to do now, to play that bit of poetry. And let me just go into my, and put it, it's by Xylophonic Blues, and I'm going to put it in the room. So, how did you feel up to reading it, or Sweet, would you like to read it?
Well, I don't care, I can read it if you like.
All righty then.
Who wrote it?
Written by Xylophonic Blues. And,
I think that's female.
I don't think it is. He went by a different name that had blue in it too. And I Okay, so and then Star's going to be up next. She's not feeling well, so she's going to call. I don't know if she's saying, wait, no, there she is there. Okay.
Okay,
so,
do you want me to read this one?
We'll get her to read first because she's not feeling well.
Okay.
Going to read. And...
Sure. That's fine.
So, the author's... All right, Hatter, are you going to read the poem he has up?
I will. Did you, Lady A, did you say you wanted to wait for Sky to call in?
Well, Sky, are you, do you need to go, like, right away, or?
If I could read and run, if that's okay. I really don't feel very well.
Okay, so I'll put your poem in the room, and then Hatter, you can read. You can
and
read
in
the...
Blue, she goes by Blue. That's who that is. Do you remember
it
Blue?
It is Blue?
Okay.
Oh.
It is Blue. Yeah.
Oh. I'm sorry, Blue. So, okay, here's yours, Sky. I hope you're going to feel better soon.
Right, thank you.
There.
Sorry. I dropped,
nope.
So I didn't want to leave you anything, but yeah.
So there it is in the room, kids. Oh, there's you.
All right.
You.
This is, there's me. This is a culmination of a series of different rites that I created. And I took like 5 rites and I made it like one master journey. But the rites were done over a series of years. So it has a more reflective and refined approach to it. As you obviously, when you get older, you have more perspective. But this is called Cracked Sidewalk in a Sneaker Dream Laced Around Live Wire by Sky Darkling. When thoughts sink claws into fresh memories, I see myself coming, the dark rooms of you, white face against shadow, the lines of red tint. And it is not only teeth and soiled hands I bear, but strings of disappointment, prejudice, violence, laced into the frail fabric, smiles of beating quilts. Fear sewed away in my chest, a mirror of streets, of slashed tires and sneakers hung on phone wire. I see them there like sky dreams, full of dead stars. We were told that sidewalks were built for safety, but as moments gather tears, on glistening sills, I realize just how broken sidewalks can be. I remember holding her hand in food line next to graffitied red brick buildings, windows boarded up, broken, still lived in, breathing needles. I remember walking those sidewalks to school where hardened children learned to survive, and we learned to only ever trust one another. And on cracked foundations of a failing community, in the backyard of rust wing, low-income housing, and blooming gangs, we play Power Ranger pretend. But the truth of it, those sidewalks did not end at the steps or in the doorways of sleeping rooms. For fear spilled into those hollow walls and stained carpets as well. I remember the consequences of leaving those doors unlocked. First with strangers breaking in, leaving cats in the freezer boxes. The mark of a neighborhood gang. I remember the microwave. A stolen television, our grandmother's rosary, and all other things not quite tangible, stolen in the darkness of youth. How they set drying couch cushions and blankets on fire in the front lawn, the grief in mother's face every time the house would change, swaddling the refrigerator bolts, locks on windows and doors, but they never seemed to keep poverty's grin and thieving fingers at bay. And with time, we learned there were thieves not only in strangers. We learned of violent hands and consequences of leaving doors unlocked. The vibrations of grinding gravel choked in throat. Words held victim to sharp undercurrents of venom as tongues were tinted in the green of glass bottles. Broken, laid bare on the stiff sand. Tone and tenor collecting calm. Never wavering from that grit, even when you hid, tucked beneath blankets, and he wielded maple and white ash, swinging as if to make it past fences. I wish it were that easy to peel back skin, to shed hide casing, but it is not. And his cheeks flaked with the wet and tears of blood pressed against chain links. We heard the calm, collective rabble in words, bitterly demanding sobriety of fragile hearts, justifying it as a lesson. And over time, I suppose, we did learn the cost of shucking scales like oysters, for the blade that peels back layers often runs deep, curving along edges, leaving trails of sediment, till veils are left only to disintegrate on tongues. And there they'd stay, looped in memory layers, all lined with threads of grief, of anger, and hate. And when did that hate turn into our own violence? I can say it was quite young and hidden in act, vandalized bus seats, small fists, curled in defense, in school detention, suspensions, and expulsions, packaged in solitude, quiet eyes, and sad smiles. Sad smiles, at least for me, till I learned to pretend, but yours were a different kind of pretending. The class clown, the comedian, my white knight. You were my hero who never had to try to be. Brave brush and a pigment of paint. The kind of canvas that smiles and swallows deeply till those scars are resurfaced. So the tissue binds so thick around skin it is hard to feel warmth. And I suppose in different ways we've both never quite recovered from those still moments. I wake even in adult room, quiet kind of panic, and question how safe I truly am. I feel the scars left on bare feet from cracked sidewalks, taste the bitter rinds of grit and glistening stills. I can't quite say that all those disappointments, those dark memories of cruelty and lies, of sadness aren't still there, tainted with a silhouette of anger. But I remember that what stopped feeding is that hate. It was the pen, of course, ink and paper compassion. We both broke the cycle of violence in our own way, and I'll always be thankful to the hero who plugged in light, bright nightlife, who understands locked doors and tin cans of cobblestone and maple and white ash, North Shore forests and cracked sidewalks, who kept his smile and protected me at all costs as we learned to love broken together. And though some dreams are always to remain, like sneakers on foam wire, a sky of dead stars, I will always believe in the power of two. And so, I'm sorry I had to read that really slow, but I'm having a little trouble breathing tonight. So.
No. Are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah. It's just I'm in a little bit of pain. So.
Oh. You know what? I have missed hearing you read, and this I recognize different parts of it from different other poems, but no one else, I'm sure, could even tell that it was a collaboration of several of your poems. I thought it was stunning and very moving, and just a really I listening. It was very alive to me to see how you grew up and the person that you became and are becoming, and I think it's really an amazing piece that you've done here. What did you think, Hatter?
Thank you, Henry.
I love the reference to the sidewalks. You know, we were told that sidewalks were built for safety. Moments gathered tears on glistening sills. I realized just how broken sidewalks can be. That's a great image.
Yes.
To introduce this poem, because you're talking about the cracks and broken parts of society. I mean, this is a true memory, basically.
This is a combination of a lot of different writings that I wrote over the years that were, and if you see at the end of the poem, it actually mentions all the names of those poems. So when it says only okay. You will understand it, the cobblestone of maple and white ash, that is the name of the poem. North Shore Forest and Cracked Sidewalks, yeah. Those are actually all the names of the poems that this is pulled from.
Yeah, and during the poem, you ask the question, when does the violence turn inward? That I guess that's a common thing, to not feel safe for an adult to lash back at family members or a small child. I'm guessing, because I was very fortunate that my parents sheltered us kids from this kind of thing. I find it hard to try to say I know what that's like, because I don't. But it's a very good emotional piece, Sky.
Thank you, Heather.
And Sweet Pea. Sweet Pea still with us? Oh, she wants to. Okay, she's calling. There you are.
Yeah,
sorry about that.
That.
Did you hear
Sky's poem? Yes, I did get to hear Sky's poem. It was stunning, spectacular.
Yeah.
I really felt like I was watching like a little 9mm kind of home movie as she went through this. Just the intimate narrative that you gave us, and the ebb and flow, and the mention of sidewalks and how that metaphor went through, and it was just so beautiful. I mean, memories of cruelty and lies, sadness aren't still there, but pain, it was still that anger. I really love that. There's still pain, but there's still that anger. We broke the cycle of violence in our own way. You know, that's very powerful to do. And I really hope that as every generation goes down and goes down, that we can continue to do that. And I'm sorry about Amadeus. I'm just really, really powerful for that. I'm sorry.
Amadeus doesn't like speaking on the phone.
No, Amadeus wants to tell his little brother where to go and how to go and what lines he can walk. So I apologize for being a teacher. So this is unbelievable.
Well, Sky, you know, you always outdo yourself with your pen, and this poem was had me really, really waiting for every word to come out of your mouth, and I just thought it was a brilliant piece, and I hope you're feeling better soon, and can join us for perhaps a longer period of time, because I value your comments and your brain, because you know you're kind of like a brainiac to me. And with your pen, and I appreciate you very much. So if you can stay, that would be wonderful. And if you can't, I certainly understand. And so I will leave it with you if you feel somewhat inspired to stay, because we've already made you feel better, then way to go.
I do have to go. I'm sorry. I have to go lay down. Again, I've been sleeping since 2, but I need to go back to lay down. I appreciate you. Thank you for letting me read and run, and I hope you have a wonderful show and an excellent topic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us and writing for this show.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Feel better. It is just pouring here right now. We get that bit of a hurricane thing going on. And we've been waiting for it for like a day and a half. We kind of expected it last night, but it's showing its ugly head right now. All right, let me just check the studio. And then Hatter, if you can read that poem that's in the
I got it.
Room. Okay, great. Perfect.
Xylophonic Blues.
Yep.
This is by a poet. Xylophonic Blues. Poetry in Motion. Now, this was written to like a contest guidelines. They had to pick a verb, a noun, an adjective, and a conjunction. Okay, I think it was a conjunction or a preposition to add into your work.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you which one. I think we can tell you which ones they use. It goes like this. Thunder's flashy envelope opens as the hollow violin begins to play. Speakers memorize a villain's earthquake and castle banners relay. A pushy mountain moose jiggles her string of pearls. Rumbling silhouettes stab and trace. Their lavish words flourish nor wander. And so when quiet lavender becomes golden poetry in motion, but a raft upon troubled waters elevates to converse. Yet the dusk slated paperback and cinnamons, cobalt eyes on this shadow-filled night divine, upon the end of grandfather's rocker recline. And it gives the choices. Don't think it says which ones they used. It was a conjunction, an adjective, a verb, and a noun. Very well poetically structured.
And very well read. Thank you for that. And what did you think of that as you read?
I was following the thunder's flashing envelope opens and a hollow violin begins to play. But when the next verse starts with a pushy mountain moose jiggles her string of pearls, I love those metaphoric type lines that make you smile. And that was one of them. It's structured very well.
And what about you, sweet? Did she drop again? No, she's there.
Yeah, she probably get her mention, get
mute.
Into the mute.
I had to get off. Yeah, I had to get off mute because I have big brothers and everything. But I love when quiet lavender becomes golden poetry. I like how he put his words together, really like bringing each thing to life, pushing mountain or flashy envelope, things that just make sure things come alive. Like the thunder flashy envelope opens as a hollow violin. Troubled water elevates to converse. These are really some great things that we put together here. And more upon the end for grandfather's rock. It's really very well done, well written.
She's an excellent writer, though, isn't she? Like, she has...
Yeah, absolutely.
Just has such a brilliant way of thinking and writing things down. She's a beautiful writer. I love her stuff very, very much. And I hope you feel better soon, Sky. And I've missed you quite a bit. I've been hiding and trying to... get with the program again. So the sun and sand do me a lot of good because it grounds me and that's good for everybody. So without further ado, and I'm going to say I should make a, just a second now. No, that's not the right one. I think that this piece that was written is because I didn't give a comment after it was read, but she wanted us to read. Did you read the AN?
Yeah, he basically wanted
the criteria for the poem.
Because it's the guidelines he had to write by.
Right. Yeah. I like I like the life she's given to, you know, the violin and the speakers and how she described it. I thought it was the memorize a villain's earthquake and castles banners relay. This was very uniquely written, I thought, and quite lovely. And to, you know, it always amazes me when you use a small word bank, big word bank. In this case, you know, the nouns and the verbs that were provided, and us being able to pick the ones that we liked. And I thought it was really interesting. And at towards the end, and so when quiet lavender becomes golden poetry in motion, but a raft on troubled waters elevates in verse, yet a desk slated paperback and cinnamon bald eyes on the shadow-filled night divine. Nor upon the end of grandfather's rocker reclined. This was just a really lovely piece, and I thought she did a really great job, and I apologize for thinking that you were somebody that I thought was male, so, but glad you joined us for this and submitted this poem for the evening, Blue. Thank you very much. And I'm just going to go check the office here, and it's just us chickens. And Hatter, do you have a piece that you would like to read?
Yeah, I brought one. This was a contest years ago that I wrote, and it was to write something that's not you, everything that is not you.
Mm-hmm.
And the host of the contest said that she did this for a smile to see if what kind of joking things could be. And after reading mine, she gave me quite a comment how I wrote it. So I brought that along. This one's not about me. It's things not about me, basically.
Okay. Go ahead.
And it's called The Story of Not Me. It goes like this. My story is told in comic books. An unknown hero, it reads. A night fighting crime in flying suits, hiding my true identity. I found the secret to world peace. A Nobel Prize is mine. If only the napkin I wrote it on, the bartender I asked, can find. I came across a child of God walking along the road, teaching tales of better things, the greatest story ever told. I've learned to keep my lonely heart safe and hid away. It never sees the beauty of the coming of each day. I always go where people are. I am always in a crowd. I do not like my privacy. I speak of it out loud. I cannot always tell if I should come or I should go. I'm always with someone else that I do not even know.
Hatter.
You always
do that, you know. I comment, like, when did you write this? You wrote this 4 years ago. I commented on this, and I said, you wear your heart on your sleeve, and I have my arms around you. So, you know, I think that the element of sadness is twisted and braided throughout this whole piece, and again, you know, the way you write, the cadence, the rhyme, it's always impeccable. The content is just, like I said, I have learned to keep my lonely heart safe and hid away. It never sees the beauty of the coming of each day. Wow. And this whole piece is like that. I always go where people are. I'm always in a crowd. I do not like my privacy. I speak of it out loud. It's very poignant and very moving. What did you think, Sweet?
That was one of my favorite. The first time I heard it, I was like, oh, I knew it's actually opposite of Hatter, but it's like him inside out.
You know,
if he would just pull himself and you see the outside in. I love the way he talks about his heart and, you know, hey, I'm all about it. I'm going to tell you about me. I'm going to be like the party. I'm going to, you know, just shoot the breeze. And I don't I don't have a heart and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wow. You do. You want to put your arms around him and just, you know, put his head in your lap and stroke his hair and just say, I'll take care of you no matter what. And that's what I love about the head.
Pretty amazing stuff.
Thank you, sweets.
Do you think you've changed some pattern?
I'm sorry? Have
I? Do you think you have? Yeah. I think you have. I think you have evolved in.
I'm not so guarded, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, like I find you kind of you're letting the your softness show more, and you're you have no choice because we can see right through you anyways. But yeah, I think you
not until you can hear my voice.
But
I got away with being an angry kid then.
Well, you can't anymore. It's impossible because it's all a facade. And, you've come a long way like that as far as your pen is concerned. I very much like that. So, sweet, what did you have for?
I have a couple, but I'm really going back and forth and trying to think what I might do. As
well, okay.
That is.
Let me see if I can. Let me see now how many we've got written.
I know you've got one.
I do. I wrote one. Let me just write. Let me just see here. Deb's going to call in. I hope this is when's done. I'm just checking off my list of things.
I had about an hour. I don't know what time I'm going to have to go and just let you know.
Okay, well, it's almost an hour. You got to listen to mine first, okay? I'll throw it up there
now.
Sure. Well, yeah, I'll stay as long as I can.
Okay, here. I wrote this. Let me see. Where am I going to put this? Not long ago. I just wrote it, actually. Not too long ago. I don't think I've read it to anybody. I don't think I have. But it's called Destined. So the poem was based on a question, what if? And so I wrote this, and you'll see how it turned out in any case. It's called Destined. We are destined, it is written, planned, determined, eons before we are born. What if we had the power to turn back time, to orchestrate our own lives? Imagine the numerous things we could change. Let us begin at the beginning. August 11th, 1954, they waited, anticipated. They created me. She caressed my tiny self. To her bosom I was held. Fingertips spilled love. Nose nuzzled, lips kissed, arms snuggled. Sparkling, clean jammies swaddled in cotton from head to bottom. Upon her lap I sat. The rocking chair kept time with every pat. A rhythm established in sync with the rocking hand on my back. Tap, 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 tap. Forward, back. Tap, tap, tap. Quietly, Irish lullabies. Little boy blue sung in my ear. Hush, little baby. Security in a simple touch. I could feel she loved me so much. Books and games, vacations on trains. To the beach each year we came. Sun and sand each day we spend swimming and digging clams. Under her watchful eye, we played knowing we were safe each day. Homework done, she made it fun to learn. Glowing report cards each term. Good habits ingrained from K to graduation. A's were maintained. Scholarships won. University well done. An RN I had become. Valedictory address honored mom. Best for giving me life, love, and happiness. What if, you ask? The possibilities are endless. End poem.
Yeah, what if? That's everybody's got that question. And sometimes you're not in control of the path you are going to take or need to take. It reminds me of there was an author that had, he interviewed the elderly people to ask them the same kind of questions. What if? One of them was, what were your biggest regrets? And they said that overwhelmingly a majority, it wasn't what they did, it was they regretted what they didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that sort of related. Yeah, you can look back, you got to embrace the good things. I think everybody does their own editing when you look back at memories, because you can't carry negative stuff with you, because that will tend to mold who you are. And it's your own editing will give you, it's like knowing when your last days. What are you going to remember? And it's not going to be anything that had a price tag.
No. Nope.
Guarantee it. It's not going to be anything. So the sooner in life you realize that, the happier you're going to be.
Well, there was somebody that was one of those YouTube videos, and she was on the X Factor or something like that. She was suffering from cancer as she sang her song. And she said something that was quite profound on the show, and she said, we can't, how did she word that just a minute? We can't wait for everything to be perfect to be happy. Curveballs and all.
P, what do you think?
Oh, well, I know I'm a very selfish person sometimes, and people stand around me and go, well, what if I had done this? And what if I had done that? And my answer is generally, I don't care about your what if. Because if your what if had taken you down another road, then I would not have it in my life. I would not have that one moment of laughter, or that one moment when I needed you, or that one moment when you were there to hold my hand. And so, screw your what if. Because what didn't happen for you happened for you. And I'm too selfish. I'm glad for what
yeah.
it led you to.
Yeah, it's true. It's true what you're saying. I guess the purpose for me to write that piece was to imagine mostly what it would have been like to have had a mother like that. You know, a mother that was
yeah.
all that I said she was in the poem.
Yeah.
And,
that's,
but, you know.
It's beautiful.
Thanks. And despite that, I mean, I'm the person that I am today because of all of that, despite all of that. And,
you can look at it that way where if anything would have changed any, let's say the butterfly effect, you wouldn't be here with us now.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not such a bad thing. Sweet, did you change phones? Because
yes.
I can't make you out at all. Hold on. So if I miss something you say to me, that's why I'm not ignoring.
Yeah, I found a verse here too.
Am I any better?
Yes.
Okay. A lot better.
All right.
Oh my god, much better, yeah.
All right.
Cool. Was it a headset?
Yeah, it's my headset. I'm going to have to readjust it.
Yeah. Mine do the same thing, so I got to go speaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always have mine on speaker.
Yeah.
Why do you have headsets?
Because I have ears.
Because you have ears?
Yeah.
You know, I found that there are some that are better than others. Some just cancel you out at all, totally. I run across those. So depending on what brand of earbuds or headset that you use can determine. You know, you can go on, Blog Talk has a list of equipment to purchase that they say are compatible with their system more than others.
Oh, all right.
Go online and find that out.
That's interesting.
Okay, are you ready to read, Sweetie P?
I am.
All right, can you slap her up on the board?
Slap her up on the board, I did.
Oh. I'm very busy trying. Okay.
Steven will be here in a minute.
Deborah?
Yes,
I did bring another one, lady. I don't know if I told you. But
yeah, you can, because I think I'll put another one. Steven's going to call in about 15 or 20 minutes, so that's nice.
Okay
so it's called The Middle Age Alphabet. And
yeah.
Also,
this is kind of me in a nutshell. I'm a little past middle age.
Yeah.
Abnormal my mind, bewildered through time. Confused, recalling thoughts on life, derailed through my inner fright, escaping my own realities, forgetting my totality, globalization of what is normal, haunting me around every corner, insanity relentlessly chasing me, jumping at shadows it seems only I see, knocked out by stress, TKO 123. Lonely and afraid as I'll ever be, mourning the loss of my identity, nothing left but my old fantasies. Obsessing about who I should be, pursuing a place in internal serenity, quietly angry, anger often rages on inside of me, restless soul I can hear screaming. Sacred heart I barely hear beating, tiptoeing around this messy subject, unified in a self-destructive project, silent if questioned about my ways, wicked and angry every day. Xerox my day, it's always the same, yearning to stay wild and not be tamed. Zip up the body bag, take me out of my skin. And poem.
Wow. Now, there's a few lines that are in this that quietly anger often rages inside of me, and you can hear yourself screaming, you can hear your heart beating. But there was another. This was unified in my self-destructive project. Violent if questioned about my ways, wicked and angry every day. That's really sad. And you know something? I feel like that a lot. And then you got to put that smile on and be nice to everyone. And you, like I'm with my friends, I'll say, you know, I hate everybody today. I think I've said that to you different times. Sweet when we talked. And the vulnerability shows through this too. Lonely and afraid as I'll ever be. And then this line, mourning the loss of my identity. Oh my goodness. I could just relate to that so much because I have felt twice in my life I have felt that loss of identity in a very serious way, and because it caused me great sorrow, but it also caused me to be resilient and find my worth, even though I felt like I lost my identity. The first time I felt I lost, you know what, three times I felt I lost my identity. When I got married, I was walking down the aisle, and I was crying and thinking, oh, this is not a good thing, and felt like I lost myself. When I signed the papers without my name, my last name, my maiden name, that was the first time. And the second time was when I was 35 and I watched a movie called Shirley Valentine. And it was about a woman my age who had lost her identity. And I cried through a good part of it. I laughed through a good part of it. But it was very, I felt like I had lost who I was. Because at the time, you know, I was somebody's mother. I was these three children. I was their mother. I was a wife. I was a housekeeper. I was a laundress. I was the cook. And all of these things were assigned to me because of, you know, choosing to stay home as a mother, which I'm very thankful that I was able to do that. But in the process of it all, I lost myself. I was somebody something, and it wasn't me anymore. And that's when I went back to school. And that was one of the best things I ever did in my life. It was fraught with guilt, but I still feel like it was one of the best things I've ever done in my life. And I don't know if you've ever had or have you ever felt that way? Let's ask you about Sweet's poem first before we do that. Sorry about that, Sweet, but I thought this was brilliant.
Thank you.
Yeah, Sweet, I would have sworn you wrote a similar piece before your operation. And so I had to look at the date of when you wrote it. This was way before that, right?
Yes. Way before that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, my philosophy, the way I look at it is, besides your own decisions, the external things that happen to you, this calmed myself knowing that many people have gone through this. Everybody goes through what we're getting old. Everybody does. We have to be as graceful as we can, because of the people, the multitudes that never got a chance. I look at it as younger people, I smile and look at them and go, it's coming for you. You're going to know what it's like very soon. You're going to blink and you'll be as old as I am. So I can smile and say, you know, be careful what you do say, because remember this date when you spoke to me that way, you know, that kind of thing. But, everybody, it's something everybody goes through. The only thing that can change is what your decisions, your personal decisions. So, and like I said, you just smile and realize too that it's a young person's world. Not that we're that old, but when you get into a certain age group, it's time to kick back in and enjoy what you can as long as you can. Because you can't look back on regrets. or you'll be a miserable person, and people are going to pick that up. Nobody likes being around a miserable person.
Well, and I think that we can, I've written this line before, too, is like we can wallow for a little while. That's normal, but to stay there and get stuck there, and I get stuck once in a while. And,
sure. Yeah,
and the important thing is to be able to bail yourself out of it eventually and get back into the program of living.
It's like anything else. The easiest thing, it's easy to hate. It's easy to question somebody else's motives. It's easy to do that. It's hard to find the good in things sometimes. That's the hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's the harder thing, and that's the most value you can get out of life.
And I would say, Hatter, my attitude has definitely changed since my heart surgery. I mean, I'm definitely more positive than I was before that. I think when this was written, nobody knew what was wrong, and it was just like so hopeless. Where I'm not as hopeless as I was before. I have more energy. I'm more upbeat. I'm more where I can actually move and do things and not be able to breathe and not know what's going on. So I think a lot of that anger is much more, not as much as it was, but there's been a lot that has gone on in my life that trying not to be bitter with that is something I fight every day.
Yeah, I truly believe we are living in the best time in history. We grew up knowing the greatest generation, hands-on, personally, and we saw the technology go from, I remember the high tech in my house, my parents' house, was the rotor antenna. That was high tech, man.
Yeah.
And just you can feel relief being that, maybe we'll be gone by the time it all goes to hell, because it seems to be going that way.
Yep.
Heck, in our house was the color TV. We went from a little black and white TV to a color TV. That was pretty amazing.
I know how my mom was so excited about the microwave. I'll never forget that.
Yep. Great job, sweet.
Thank you.
Have you got? Let me see. Let me just check something for a minute. I think Steven's going to call in. So he's the only one actually, and Deborah Lee. So hopefully they'll call in. So if you want to throw another one up there, Hatter, feel free.
Yeah, let me go get it.
What'd you say, sweet?
I unfortunately get up at 4 a.m. and go to the mountains for the dog show. So I have to go. I love you guys.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, okay. And thank you for calling in and contributing to tonight. Great to talk with you and hear your voice.
All right, guys. Have a good night. I'm off to Avon to show the puppies off tomorrow. Big Frisbee Day.
Excellent.
All right. Talk to you later. Great subject, ladies.
Night, night. Thank you.
Night.
Bye, sweets.
Bye.
Bye, sweets.
Bye, honey.
And so, Hatter, you've got a show too, or?
No, not yet. I won't leave you alone.
Well, that's okay, because when Stephen and Deb call in, I'll just shut it down after they've called in. So, it's okay if you need to run.
Okay.
I can talk to myself.
Okay. Okay. I posted the other one. This has to do with who I am. It's called The Sounds of Nothing There.
Oh, okay.
It goes like this. I walked the sands beyond the beach where I found a paper shell. The voices I heard echoing, a noise I knew too well. It was the sounds of nothing there and no place to really be. Stories of complete despair that seemed too real to me. I wondered if it got better when I was left alone. I rose when I was dreaming and I fell when I was stoned. I cannot remember where I went when they told me I was there. I could not find my way home, so I knelt and said a prayer. I wonder if there was something I cared about so much, knowing I felt nothing when you reached for me to touch. To those I pushed away, I was blind, I am sorry. And this was written for an eight-year. This was written for an eight-year addiction to opiates from a brain surgery. It was the beginning of the journey and the end. The fog I lived in was, I so wanted to be. I was dying every day. Wasted a decade and lost everything. I have been clean. When I wrote this, I've been clean for 10 years at that time, so 17 years in clean.
Wow.
And yeah, brain surgery, not good.
No. You know what? I commented on this 7 years ago. And I said, this is heartbreaking. As I read, I could feel the emptiness, see through blurred eyes, and on the journey to life, the pain and guilt of not seeing them became overwhelming. I have lost my daughter to addiction. You have bared your soul an amazing right of survival and victory, and a very dear, dear price you've paid. Wow. This is pretty darn amazing. Did I save it to my list? I'm going to save it today.
Yes, you did.
I did?
Save poems by others.
Okay. Yeah. I think this is an amazing pen, and it's brutally honest and rips your heart out for sure. No doubt about that at all. I'm just going to check the studio. Wow.
And I have about 1,000 views. Look at that.
Really?
Wow. 900 and something, yeah.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it? I'm gonna put another poem up for me.
Okay.
Let me see.
I'll check the studio.
Yeah.
Here's one
I wrote. Huh?
Just me and you.
Just us chickens. Here, I'm going to put this one in here. And this is called I Am. And it pretty much describes me too. I am not my mother, my voice and touch are love. I am not my sisters. I am strong. No man will ever shove. I am not a follower. Leader is my name. I stand alone for truth. Others fear to face. I am not disloyal. On me you can depend. I am needy. Of this I feel no shame. I am made of substance, worthy of love and respect. I possess intelligence. I am divergent, not perfect. End poem.
Yeah. You know, leaders are the first one to find out they're waist high in the mud, too, so.
Yep. I remember one time when we were battling, a group of us were battling with our union and our nurses' union, and we were being accused of being rabble-rousers and shit disturbers and all the rest of it. And I said to them at one point, the executive of the local and the provincial governing body, and we had the Canadian Labor Union people there too. It was a big deal. It was a huge deal, actually. And at one point, they were accusing us of trying to destroy the union, and I said, you know, the union as it stands now is here because people like me and these other four people worked and fought for change within the union. What we're delivering here to you people is we're advocating for change because the same old ain't working, and it's still not working. We've been without a contract now for 3 years, and it's ridiculous. And we have such a poor – anyway, I digress. But the point is that you oftentimes do have to stand by yourself to get some things done or to be heard. You have to do a lot of screaming because either nobody believes you or they just ignore you or they blackball you. I got blackballed big time. But
I believe through history there were times where unions were needed and they were a good thing.
Yeah.
Then there are times where unions are not so good. I can turn
exactly.
on. So and you have to decide yourself what time that is. I've been in unions and I've worked non-union. And I can see the benefit, and I also was the one that got left. They put in the back on me. So, you know, it goes, unions are funny. I look at it as, well, look at the automobile industry. The unions were so big and powerful. They chased the automobile manufacturers overseas. That's all
yeah.
they did. They cost how many tens of thousands of jobs. So that was a union thing that did that. Now,
yeah.
whether they, how that, mess got started, how big they are, the lobbyists. I think anytime they get lobbyists, I think something is too big. They should not be political, for one thing. And you can easily send a manufacturer overseas, and that's happened time and time again.
Well, it's destroyed
you,
the
you
country.
You can't demand $100,000 a year plus benefits, even after plus a retirement package that pays more than most working stiffs. You're gonna.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what's gonna happen, and I'm not a spokesman for the automobile industry. I don't mean to demean anything that happened. It seems to me, the union bit us in the butt. It just chased. We were Detroit. Look at Detroit. Motown.
Yep.
Ain't Motown no more. And that goes for a lot of other industries too. So.
It's really sad, though, because, you know, what I know about the union thing here, and, you know, you'd think, oh, I won't say it out loud, but in any case, that they are reputable, because of the kind of people they are so-called protecting. And the more I found out, the worse it got, because it was very much, whose grease and whose palm, and it still is. And I did a whole lot of shouting about it back in the day, and everybody just said, okay, give it a rest. You know, you're hysterical. You're this or that. And I said, mark my words, and they certainly are right now, because they have no contract. They are. Do you know what they're paying in long-term disability? Like, I was paying $174 a month for long-term disability, and now they've chosen in the midst of this pandemic to increase the long-term disability payments to $200 a month. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Which I
yeah,
think is insane.
Yeah, I don't even want to get into the bad experience with the last union I dealt with, but...
you understand what I'm saying, I know.
Absolutely. You know, working with no contract is not good. Sometimes unions have a way of forcing it down your throat.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they've been in bed with government anyways ever since I've, it's, you can't expect the employer to behave any different than it has the last 30 years because they have no respect for the nurses.
Well,
your
employer has little to do with the union.
Yeah.
In fact, nothing
to do with
the union. Well, the employer is the
government because we're government-paid employees.
But if your union is what you sign contracts with, they control your environment, what your conditions. If they don't sign a contract, there's a reason for it, and the worker suffers. And the worker suffers.
Yeah,
it goes along with cost of living too. They're fighting for a higher wage. Now that's a good thing. But I remember. Well, I don't want even to start on the ends here. It's complicated, just like anything else. Anything else, everything
yep.
else that has deals with money and wages and workman's comp and disability, it's very complicated. There are a lot of aspects of how you got to any given point, and you have to give it all in consideration. So to stand outside that box and bitch and moan is not fair to anybody that has been dealing with it. So I realize that, and if I came across, I don't want to come across ignorant, but I can't help it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Oh, I think this must be Stephen, maybe.
What's
hello.
Yep. Hello, it's Stephen.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're just having an interesting conversation about, we're waiting for you to call, first of all, and then we were having a conversation about the unions.
Yeah, I heard that. I have mixed emotions about the unions. I'm in a union right now, but I still have mixed emotions about them.
Yeah, I hear you. That was me, too. So, did you want to read your poetry, or did you want to share something that we don't know about you, or?
That's not how you do it. You got to ask them the same way you ask me. Tell us something we don't
know
about you.
Tell me something that we don't know about you.
I'm trying to think what I have never told anybody.
Tell me your left hand. Tell me your left hand.
No, I'm right-handed.
Right-handed. Well, there you go. Didn't know that.
Yeah. I guess I feel older than I am.
You're just an open book. Huh?
I am. I don't hide very much. I let it all out in the poetry.
Yeah. Good venting avenue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So, what did you...
When I was younger... What's that?
Okay, go ahead, tell us that.
When I was younger, I dealt with what was called an explosive personality disorder, and I even took a sledgehammer to my best friend's car, and I had to go to therapy, court-ordered therapy for a while for that. How's that?
Sledgehammer management? Sledgehammer
management.
Okay, you can use the crayon.
I'm much better now.
Doctors say I'm much better now.
Oh, my phone's going to die. Just hang on. I got to go change phones. That's not good. Talk amongst yourselves, kids.
All right. In that case, I got see if I can. H's are so far down on this list now. Hold on. Okay, here. Oh, God darn it. Oh, crap. I pushed the wrong button. I got to fly out.
It sucks when that search thing doesn't work.
See, it just kicked me out of the room. Gosh, damn it.
What were you going to hit?
I'm running down. I was gonna play our fishing sound.
Oh.
Kick me out of the room. I mean, there's nothing better than that sound. Mm. Oh, I can fake it.
Mm. Makes me think of that scene from Jaws.
You know, I played that the other night. That the intro before that is quite lengthy.
Yeah, that weird underwater sound.
Okay, I see. It didn't start me though. Of course it did. Okay, zipping through. Maybe I can beat Lady A. So, you watch baseball, Steven?
I try to watch as much as I can.
Yeah. Been some exciting, we got some power hitters out there now. How about that pitcher hitting another grand slam?
A pitcher, I know, that's crazy.
It is. Yeah, I always thought it was weird because usually the pitchers, when you're young, the pitchers are usually the best athletes. So once in a while, you'll get a pitcher in the major league that still can hit that ball, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but when the pitcher gets a grand slam off you, I think it's time to retire.
Yeah, how many did you walk to fill those bases to get the pitcher, to get to the pitcher?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Well, it's okay, not what I thought it was.
Okay, I'm back. I got dropped.
Okay.
So.
You pushed Kiki out? Did I do that?
No, my
did
phone
that
died. My
you
phone
CPR.
Was. Yes, I had to do CPR on the phone. So, Stevie. Let
yes.
me see. I'm going to put your piece in there.
All right.
There it is. And Deb left the SoundCloud, so it kind of looks like we're going to do that for her. So I'm going to put yours in the room there now.
All right.
It's just pouring out. Okay, there you have it, Steve.
All right. This is the Thomas Kincaid picture was the prompt for this one. And I really enjoy writing to the Thomas Kincaid pictures because it really brings out memories for me. Wrote this
nice.
Thinking about both of my grandparents' houses kind of mixed into one poem. And that's why it's called Billiards in the Basement and Rubber Alligators in the Yard. Potato crisps in a can and ribbon candy hugs, Salem's menthol kisses and false teeth clacking top to bottom. Pleasurable musty basement smell and sounds of phenolic resin impact bounce and roll through small quarters beneath emerald felt. Stewed tomatoes in mason jars poured into bowls, lightly salted before ingestion, links riddled with straw-sized holes. Backyard croquet and giant darts near the creaking playset of metal and plastic, whilst I hide between tall corn stalks, copping pea pods off the vine. End poem.
Yeah, Lady A. Yeah, I remember this one, Stephen.
I thought it was I thought it was muted, and I was unmuted, and I muted myself. So I thought that was really great. It had a lot of nostalgia in it. And I remember playing croquet and eating sweet potatoes. And I think, and the giant darts, how dangerous was that for kids, eh?
Oh, I was just going to say that's when they picked they picked the fun out of childhood. That was a great game. Giant
darts,
yeah.
And what was the other one? Chemistry sets, and what was the other one? The wood burning kits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Electric football games. I remember the vacuum form and the creepy crawlers. They give you this freaking hot plate that gets freaking red hot and melts plastic and you. Yeah, that's a good one for a 7-year-old.
Yeah. Hey, we're still alive.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, we didn't have dumb kids as friends. They didn't last very long.
I never ever once threw a giant dart way up in the air and ran. Never once.
Yeah. Hey, me and my buddies, two of my friends, we would go up into the hills, where one would stand on one hill with a big valley type in between, and would shoot these arrows at each other, just launch them in the air, and you follow it and follow it and follow it, and then when you lose it, you ran for the tree to hide behind. But we were trying to basically catch the arrow as it came down.
Wow.
It was, you could get it, you would have it, it would go through your hands, you could feel the feathers, you could never quite grab it fast enough. But as long as you could see it, him launch it from, a football field, at least a football field, if not further away, you could see it up, and when it turned over, you'd lose it sometimes. And when you couldn't pick it back up, you had to scramble. Dive into the tree. Great fun. Great fun.
Indeed.
Now, Stephen, did you really eat stewed tomatoes like that out of a mason jar?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Cam.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, up on the farm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fall and early winter, man. You canned everything.
Yeah, my grandmother. Tons of mason jars filled with deliciousness.
Oh, wow.
You know, the stewed tomatoes or the canned tomatoes were the best, too, man. And peaches.
Yeah.
Oh, peaches, I love. My love of peaches, yeah. So, Heather, what did you think about his poem?
Oh, it was very nostalgic. I remember when he read it before. I asked him if that was Grandma's. And we had a discussion on, you got to know your great-grandparents and your grandparents were, I knew one grandma. Yeah. So, a little jealous, but I wrote a piece about my grandma. I wrote a piece called Grandma, and I had to say, no, that was not my grandma. My grandma was a tiny little thing, and, you'd have to, yeah. I'm still trying to find it.
Oh, no.
Let him bite. Let him take it. Let him take it. Don't horse him.
What is that?
It's a fishing reel. Listen.
Oh.
He's nibbling. He's nibbling. Hold on. Not yet. He's on. Hook him. Now, how big is it? He's going to spool you. There he goes. Better stop him.
I never want to pick up this line.
Last time I was in the Delta, I went out on this pier, and the water was rushing by really fast. And I threw up into the hole and came back where I thought there would be a hole because the water split at this big pole. One was the main river, and then it came into where the docks, and the water slowed down a little bit. And I had 20-pound test on there, and I had to keep adding weight because the water was so swift. Finally got it to where it bounced off the bottom a couple times, and this thing took it, and it spooled me. It took every – I could not turn it around. Whatever it was, it was huge, and it just – it took every – all my line.
Wow. Yeah. I have a similar story from Lake Pamatuni where something down deep took the hook, and I was fighting with it forever, and I started to make headway. But then the damn thing had wrapped the line around the anchor line and snapped it. So after a while, I was really in the anchor with a fish.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever watch the Swamp People?
What?
No, I've never watched.
Really? It's like my favorite show. I don't know why it's my favorite show, but it is. It's just, it's down in Louisiana in the swamps, and they hunt alligators.
Oh, yeah.
And to see them, alligators is quite something.
Yeah, you can keep them gators. I'm not living anywhere where I'm not top of the food chain.
Yeah.
They're monstrosities, though, aren't they? Holy cow.
Well, look at the dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Basically here when the dinosaurs were here, man. Jesus. Yeah, it gives a little adventure. It gives a little adventure when you say, go get me a bucket of water. No, hell no.
No. But they swim in it. They swim in the bayou. I don't know how they do it in a relaxed fashion, but they do.
Not for very long.
Yeah, no.
Or it's
yeah,
like Australia.
Yeah, everything in Australia. I ain't going in the water in Australia, I'll tell you that, when I get there. I might fish. I might do some shore fishing. But, you know, them big crocs, saltwater crocs, they're out there in the ocean, too.
Are they?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yep.
So that means they come ashore. Go walk. That ain't a log you're stepping on. My dad told a story about he was in the Navy. He was stationed down in Georgia. And he had a friend when they had shore leave who knew this old swamp guy. So they were going to go gator hunting. So they're walking down this path. My dad's got a 30-30, and so did the other two of his buddies. And the old guy, he's got this freaking flintlock powder, black powder gun or something. My dad, he's leading me, and he's ready to step over a log, and the guy grabs my dad's shoulder and yanks him back. And he goes, that ain't no log. He stands back. It's a flipping crocodile or an alligator. So my dad aimed to shoot him, and he shot that 30-30, and he said it pinged right off his skull, just ping, like a ricochet off his skull. And the gator sort of moved, and the old guy took that flintlock and cocked that thing back and shot it, and the gator just rolled over. I guess you got it.
And they got it. Yeah, there's a soft
there's
spot
a,
or
there's
something.
Only one place, there's only one place in the skull you can hit. It's about the size of a quarter.
Yeah.
They say.
Yeah. Huh.
But, yeah, I'll watch National Geographic if I want to see gators. Maybe get them close up and personal.
Yeah, because when I was younger.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, when I was younger, my dad, well, my parents would take me and my sister down to Florida, and a lot of the times my dad's parents would come too. And there was a time when my grandfather, my dad, and I were fishing, and we were renting a boat, and the one guy was saying, you can fish anywhere on this pond, but stay out of this inlet over here. And he was pointing at it on the map. So we were out there fishing, and nothing was biting. And finally, my grandpa and my dad got this idea, like, well, maybe that's his fishing hole. So they went over there to check it out. And we threw our lines in, and all of a sudden you heard this huge hissing noise. And on the shore was one of the biggest alligators I ever saw in my life, and it slipped into the water. And, I mean, he didn't go that fast. But my dad always liked to say that my grandfather passed motorboats with the oars.
So did the guy find out he went to his fishing hole?
Yeah. He just see one of the horns with a big gator in there. He didn't say that. He just said, stay out of there.
Well, I went to New Orleans a long time ago, and I took a tour into the bayou and saw that they still live in houses on stilts right in the bayou, and there were kids that were fishing for catfish on flat-bottom boats, and there was the boat that we were on. We threw, like, chickens overboard, dead chickens overboard for to feed the gators. They'd come right up to the boat.
Yeah.
And jump to get the meat off the sticks. Yeah, that was kind of scary.
Yeah.
Oh, baby, I gotta go.
So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play Deb SoundCloud, and that's the last poem for the night, unless you want to put another one up, Stephen.
No, I'm good.
I got to go, guys. I got it. Thanks, Lady A. Stephen, I'll chat with you later.
Okay, bye, Gatter. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'll play Deb. Are you going to, Stephen?
No, hang out for Debs.
Okay.
A Lifelong Journey in 3 Minutes by Deborah Lee. Silent movie clips roll in my brain as I share my journey. Shut your eyelids tight and listen. Only closed eyes will get to see. My words paint a lifelong story. A childhood filled with wishes and wonder. Jam-packed with love and infectious giggles. Each Christmas an avalanche of gifts. Little girl birthday bashes, summer vacations, Easter egg hunts, and trick-or-treat. Daddy gave raspberry tummy tickles. Mommy spread light bunny kisses, like butterfly kisses, but sweeter. Mama wore the wings of the tooth fairy and the hat of the hand holder. She and Daddy made the rules and were the keepers of huge warm hugs. And Mom's nurse's cap, falling teardrops, were gently dried. She kissed boo-boos all better. Mixed baking soda paste cures to soothe bee stings as I cried. She gave and gave and gave to everyone. Teen years a bit tougher. We butted heads often. Too many I'm sorry's, but at least they were said. Remember when you hated to admit Mom could be right? Then I grew up. Adulthood's grip grabbed a hold. Pulled up my big girl panties and set routines. Got married, had children. Someone says you're just like your mother, and I smile. With a roller coaster of ups and downs, life's no fairy tale, but it's loaded with bliss. And then, slam, a nightmare grabs the short hairs, yanking so hard you see blinding stars. Our world falls off its axle to free fall, into chasms of grief and darkness. You hear the words, and they hit like an atomic bomb. At first, it will not compute. Then, there's an out-of-body experience. It can't be. Terminal diagnosis? No. Mommy has cancer? Stage 4? No. My first reason to smile, biggest supporter, my first best friend, no. My mom has pancreatic cancer. She's a warrior, my family's warrior. Tough as nails, as Daddy always said, her staggering bravery, a sight to behold. I hate cancer. She fought hard, struggled fiercely, won many little battles. But cancer took and took and took. Cancer made her ache inside and cry agonizing tears outside. Cancer ate at her body. At the end, on that rainy, stormy day, with 13 of us filling her room, surrounding her, holding her hands and whispering, "I love you, I love you." She breathed one last breath. Then cancer stole my mommy and an angel carried her away. Cancer kills. Cancer kills. It kills. Cancer won the war. Cancer won the war, but heaven has another angel now. I love you, Mommy. I miss you every minute of every day. When I hear a person say she's just like her mother, there are no nicer 6 words they can speak until we meet again. I love you.
I remember when she played this one other time. That was something else. What did you think, Steve?
The first time I've heard it, my first impression before we got to the really heavy stuff is how much younger she sounds in the recording. Sorry, but I saw that it was done 4 years ago. But yeah, I can relate to this because my father was eaten away by cancer too, and the denial that you go through, and I hate cancer too. This is a wonderful piece of spoken poetry that really tells a story, and I'm still, as I've said it many times to her, but I'm going to say it again, that I'm very sorry for your loss, Deb.
Yeah, me too. Sorry for your loss, and thankful that you had such a terrific love for your mother and she for you, and I know that's got to be some comfort for you. For sure. It seems like everybody's touched by cancer in some way or another. My father died of it. And it seems most people... I have a really good friend right now. She had ovarian cancer 5 years ago, and they got it all, they thought. And she was just tested recently, and she just hit her 5-year mark. And it's back again, and it's not good. So, yeah, and it just saddens me to think that so many lives are touched by it. And I saw it every day at work when I was working, and it's just insidious, you know.
Yeah.
But Deborah, thank you for sending this piece full of love and sadness, and full of family, and it's a beautiful piece, even though it makes me cry.
Mm. Yeah.
So, Steve, it's 6 minutes left, and you can read another poem, or we can say goodnight. I thank you for calling. I appreciate you calling, and I appreciate you submitting poetry as well.
Of course. Yeah, but I'm going to have to call it myself. The eyelids are getting heavy, and I'm ready to get a shower and go to bed.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in and bringing your poem with you. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And I want to say thanks to Hatter, Beat, and Sky, and Deborah, and you, Stephen, and Blue. I'm hoping I didn't miss anybody. I don't think I did. No, I didn't. So it was a quiet night, but it was an interesting night and some great conversation, too, and I always appreciate that. So without further ado, I bid you adieu and good night and stay safe until the next time. Thanks, Steve.
Okay.